This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
First time I ever saw a track encounter. Elvis Kaufman, the Redbone boy in Knoxville.
Yeah.
He had one. And when we had the big old, you know, antenna you hold out, we were fascinated with that. Then I remember, I think Dancer was about 10 or 11 months old, and I realized that was, I had a hold of something a little different. I said, I better get me one of those tracking collars.
Yeah. And
a fella come, a young guy from South Carolina, forget his name, he came up to go hunting. He wanted to look at breeding a female. So I told him, I just got this collar. He said, oh, I'll show you how to use it. Well, Lord, I was forever. And I finally got to where I could tell which direction he went anyway. But today's... Hey, with today's technology, I'd look like an idiot out there. I'm just leaving the truck.
Well, I've seen that happen, too. I've seen guys throw them down. My buddy Bill Slaughter, I used to laugh at him down here when he first got a Garmin, you know. And yeah. He said, I can't get it to calibrate the compass. It wanted to tell me.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to turn it, roll it, and then you got to flip it back toward you and back. And he'd get to the third step, and then it wouldn't go. And oh man, he was fussing, fuming, stomp around. And I told him one night we hit a coon and had a pretty good race out of it, and it made a circle and came right back in toward us and treed. Man, it was beautiful. I said, Bill, you didn't hear one bark of that race for fooling with that garment. Yeah.
That's what they do. They spend so much time at it.
Yeah.
I remember one of my good friends, Wayne Flanders, he got into hunting. He hunted a year, and he was loaned a blue tick, and he never saw a coon for a year. And I met
him. That's being faithful, isn't it?
He went hunting with me, and we, you know, we're going to tree usually at least one every night. And
yeah.
So he went with me, and he said, I'm doing something wrong. Well, anyway, I said, let's get you a dog. So the next Coon Club meeting we went to, Stanley Lewis. Did you ever know Stanley?
Mm-mm. Who was the blue tick guy that you were hunting with some and all that kind of played a part in us getting hooked up with Williams down there and all?
Hey, that was Wayne. That was Wayne. He's the one that worked for Georgia Power.
Yeah.
That okay. was Wayne.
All right.
So Wayne said, I told us, we got to get you a dog. So the next Coon Club meeting, Stanley Lewis. Heck, Stanley, that's a story in itself. You know how these stories, we get off track, as you say.
Okay, now I pushed the red button when your phone rang. So I'm going to tell you, in case you decide to commit libel or slander or anything with these fellow coon hunters, that I'm recording this conversation because it's been a year since you and I visited. I looked on my log, and it was January the 25th of 2025. So I'm imposing on you, but I hope you've got some time, Fred.
I'm just sitting here. Go
right on. Tell me about Stanley.
Well, what it was, we went to that meeting. Stanley Lewis is an interesting fellow. He was in our club. He likes to wheel and deal in dogs, but he knows a coon dog, and he'll be hunting a good one. What he done, he worked for a auctioneer down there. His dad started it, and he went, they sold out some. But he would travel all over the country, all Illinois, Ohio, Missouri, buying farm equipment. He'd go to these auctions. He might buy two tractors and a corn picker and a mower, whatever. And all he did is make a phone call and have a truck come pick them up and deliver them back to Perry, Georgia. So he kind of had an open account. I mean, he could spend $10,000 or $75,000, and they'd bring it back, clean it up, and sell them. And very successful. They had a good business going. Well, Stanley, and he's a good personable individual anyway, meet anybody. And Stanley would go around and say, who's got the best coon dog in the county you know of?
Yeah.
You know, they'd give him a name. He'd go over there. And he'd go hunt with it if he could. He bought some, he said, off the lead. But mm-hmm. a little different than most of us, he dropped $6,000, $8,000 on a dog. And he's buying good dogs. He knew what a dog was. He hunted what he meant. Our, and he said, I'm not interested. So he comes to the Coon Club meeting, got this dog in the box, a walker dog named Bud. Good-looking dog. Grand Knight. He was 8 years old. Stan had just gotten back. That's what's interesting about that night. He had a truck with a dog box in it, Bud in it, and a trailer on it with a bush hog or something. That week, he sold the truck, the dog, the trailer, and the bush hog.
Package deal or separate?
That was Stanley's game.
I see.
He went in several hunts. He'd always go to the Winter Classic, and he would hunt in them. But his dog's for sale. I don't care what he is. He's for sale.
Right.
Well, and he'd always make them. But see, he wasn't using his money. He and he's like the people he worked with. They said, I don't care what you buy as long as we split the profit. He said, well, I'll just buy the. So he would buy some good that night. Now he, I said, Stan, my friend here, and I know him pretty well. And I said, Stan, my friend here, Wayne, he needs a good. He said, I got him in the dog box. He said, when the meeting's over, we'll take him down the river. So we could say good looking, good mouth. If I could name his sire, you'd know him right off. He was a walker dog out of Ohio. I'd read and knew the name right off.
Yeah.
Didn't know the people or anything. But anyway, long story short, we took him for a hunt, turned him loose. He went down in there in the first drop. Made a big group, and Stan had his tracking collar out. Well, he was out that we didn't know anything about track collars then. He got it out, and he said, he's coming in. He's coming right up the road. You were right. Sure enough, here he comes, plum, plum, plum. Took him the second drop. Pow, he treated coon. Boy, sound good. Good tree dog. Just nice. Couldn't ask any better. So we got back, and my friend Wayne didn't know any better. So he said, what do you want for him? He's 8-year-old, grand knight. He said, $800. And Wayne said, well, can I try him a week or two? Wayne didn't know any different. You know how to deal. And he said, no, for that price. He said, well, you know that I know Stan didn't pay $800 for him.
Right.
He's making $100 or something.
Sure.
And
I always get a little boot.
Yeah. And I told my buddy Wayne, I just nodded at him. I said, hey, we can gamble him. I'd buy the dog. So Wayne bought him. Well, he'd be. He's in the top 20 dogs I've ever hunted with. We hunted him till he died, about 3 years, and straight as an arrow, excellent temperament, never leave a tree. You couldn't ask for anything better. And I told Wayne, I said, he bred a couple females and they didn't get pups.
Mm-hmm.
And they heard about him. They'd come up and breed you. So anyway, I tracked down through UKC. I called him, got the owner of his stud, called him in Ohio. I said, hey, I'm hunting with this dog. He just laughed, whoever it was. He said, I couldn't tell you how many hundred coon that dog's treat. He said, he was a dandy. He said, but he was sterile at 2 years old.
Said,
what's sterile? And they couldn't breed him, and they had a pen full of dogs. But I mean, what an outstanding dog he was.
Mm-hmm.
And Wayne had no idea at the start of it till he was in it a while, traveled around the country with us. And that's, he's the very one. Now, I don't think he may have had, I don't think he had Bud when we were down there, when we went to the plantation.
Yeah.
But he's the one that set that up. He was my contact.
Yeah, I remember that very well. Yeah.
Heck of a nice guy. And all that.
Sure, for our listeners may not know, Fred and I are talking about our hunts there in conjunction with the UKC Winter Classic, which, by the way, is coming up next month, Fred. I just talked to my buddy Nubbin, and we're going to take the old-timers tour and go out to Batesville, Mississippi here next month. I don't know why, but we're going to go, and we're going to howdy and shake.
You'll enjoy that.
Yeah. We always have a good time out there. We got room if you want to go. We rent a cabin out there on that Sardis Lake and build up a good fire every night and sit there and tell war stories till we get sleepy.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
But my wife has dementia.
Okay.
I can't leave her alone. I can do a one nighter occasionally. Mm-hmm. I get my daughter-in-law run up here and all, but I just can't, that's where we're at right now.
Our good friend Lindell Price up in Virginia is going through that right now.
And
I just, I tell you the thing, I am so thankful and grateful to have lived as long as I have. I'll be 80 in October, but the bad part about living this long is that your friends, start falling away. And that's the tough part of it. But I don't want to complain, because it sure beats an alternative, doesn't it?
Mine hit me about 6 or 7 years ago. I was going 10 years ago. I could hunt, do it all. no different. But then when the stroke hit me, when I had a stroke in 21, my muscles just aren't, they aren't there in my right side, just not right. And I know it, but I tell my friends, hey, we've outlived our welcome. I said, hey, you know, they'll take you, and they'll go, but you just kind of, I go fishing. My buddy has to help me in the boat, and I crawl out of the boat, and I said, I can't get up on the pedestal anymore. Hey, I don't trust myself on that swivel.
Tell me about it. You know, I love a kayak here in these flats out here around here. And I can't get out of the thing,
you
can't stand
get down
up.
And get out of it.
I have to crawl out of it.
Let me tell you, this month, the start of this month, I've been driving for 9 years, a part-time job for a family-run nursery, driving a little box truck, and I love it. Yeah. I could get out. I leave early in the morning. I would leave like 4 or 5 o'clock. I go to the Smokies. I go to South Carolina, North Georgia, and in the mountains. And they've built a beautiful clientele. The Hispanics unload the truck in about 15 minutes. All I do is drive and sit there in air condition. No big thing, but I really enjoyed it.
Sure.
And they notify. I've been with them 8 or 9 years driving, and it's seasonal. I'm off all winter, go with my friends hunt and whatever. So that worked out. And it's one of those jobs. It's 3-4 days a week. If you can go, fine. If you can't, somebody else will take it.
Yeah.
So it's, you don't have to go. Mm-hmm. They notified me about three weeks ago, I guess. They were about in tears. In fact, the guy that sends the driver's side, he said, I can't call him. He said, I'm afraid I'd lose it. And so he told the boss, you got to call him. So the insurance won't insure me.
I'll be darned.
At 84. I didn't know. Another thing I learned. I had no idea. It's like I tell my friends, every month you realize, especially every year, a privilege you lose.
Yeah.
Something you took for granted.
Right. And, Fred, everything. And it just kind of blindsides you. It sneaks up on you all of a sudden, and then there it is. And you say, well, how did I get to this point? I hadn't really thought about that. I can remember as a younger man saying, man, they're not going to take my keys away from me.
That's probably the worst thing I tell everybody. Can you imagine when they say, I had to do it with my wife? She done it by saying you can't drive anymore. If they told me that, they might as well bury me. Because if I'm sitting, I couldn't think of it. Like you, I could not think of the thousands of miles. I just get in my truck and drive back roads, drive around through creeks. And I know with you, and there's something about the mountains that's a lure with me. When I drive through those mountains of North Georgia and North Carolina in the Smokies and that little old creek run alongside, I think of all my hunting buddies, all the time I heard it. I said, listen, I think when I'm struck up there about a half mile.
That's right. Just trying to hear a dog along one of those swift-running creeks, and you think you hear them all the time. Or it's like hunting in the rain. You can hear them tree and tree.
Well, and there's something about I hear a dog's rhythm. I can't hear him, but I could hear that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I said, he's tree. I don't know which direction, but he.
That's right. That
you
old
know, the people in flatland would never know that. They don't experience that.
Yeah.
They jump the truck and drive around and say, you're right over here.
Yeah, well, it's made it so easy with these GPS collars and all.
You mentioned rain. I lived in Knoxville, and a trucker was driving through from Pennsylvania, and he called my number. He had a black and tan book or something, and he said, are you by chance going hunting tonight? And it was through the week. I said, sure, we can go. We can go close here. So I took him. When he got to where I met him, you talk about raining. It was pouring down, but he was going to go anyway. So I said, we got a little hollow up there. We ought to be able to hit a coon. So I went and took him. He and I dumped that, turned that dog loose. And it was quiet. We was walking in there, just pouring rain. I said, he'll hunt an hour. He'll be back right at an hour if you don't get treed. I said, one thing he won't do, he won't go to the truck. I said, then don't make it as what happens. We made a big circle and come back to the truck. There he's sitting in the dog box, his eyes shining out of the dog box.
Made a liar out of you, didn't he?
I don't know if a time or two in his life he ever come back.
And that was the dancer dog? Was that the dancer dog?
Oh, no. That was a Joe dog. First registered
dog. Oh, way back. Way back. We're going back.
Wouldn't even hunt one like him today.
I gotcha. Yeah.
They're just too wide. You know, you turn him loose and he's going to hunt 1 hour if it was downtown Atlanta.
Yeah. And
at the end of that time, he'll come in from behind. It's amazing. Every time, hunt him in the mountains all his life. He'll come behind you on the dead run. I can hear him coming. And I holler his name, and he'll come straight to me. But if I send him that second time, I tell my hunting buddy, I said, son, you better fire up the truck because I don't know which way.
Well, we're going to start driving, hitting the high places, listening. Yeah, well, that's pretty incredible. I my buddy up there in the mountains in Taylorsville. Now he's not in the rough mountains of North Carolina, although he's close. I mean, he's just south of going back up there and toward Blowing Rock and Boone and all that. Yeah. So he's got plenty. They bear hunt all that country in there. But he was out the other night. I think it was maybe last night, and he turned the dog loose one spot, and he treed two in there. And then he went to the second spot, and the dog covered 2.16 miles in there and never made a bark. And he said he got around, drove around near him, and he saw him, his light on his collar, about 100 yards away, and he hollered at him, and he come right on. He really handles good. But but you think about that. Somebody posted, after I put that on Facebook, they posted and said, hunting 2.16 miles and didn't tree a coon, you need to come to Arkansas, he said. But it ain't like that in the mountains sometimes. Hey, you know,
people don't realize I hunted many a night, never struck a coon. I mean, that's common.
Well, yeah. If it wasn't, as my mother said, born and bred in me from my dad, you know, there's no way, because I would imagine sometimes we'd hunt all week, maybe not hunt every night, but maybe tree one coon,
you know,
and tickle to death, you know, that absolutely. We treed that one. But he was in trouble. If it was season, he was in trouble if we did tree, because he was coming out of there.
Now people travel so much more than they did 30 years ago, 40 when I was doing that. And but a lot of people don't have a clue about these mountains and the difference in it.
Yeah.
You've been all over, know the difference.
Right. Well, I got off the subject just a little bit, but I want to get right back to this. While we were talking about earlier, just made reference to the Williams family there and hunting there in Albany, Georgia, on that Southern Heritage Plantation, which was a Disney World for coon hunters, wasn't it? Boy, those were some good days. And if you folks, you can go back to January, I believe it was around the 25th of 2005, Fred and I visited, and we talked a lot about hunting there on that plantation and what a great time we had. But back in to that mountain hunting, Fred, you know, if a person has never done that, if they've grown up in the cornfields, and you've lived both places, you lived in Indiana and had probably some of the best hunting in the country up there, I would think. Yeah.
You catch coon with a shepherd, farm dog.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I made a call earlier this evening, and it's still kind of feeling bad about it. I had a hunting buddy. Well, I still have him, thank God, but a buddy named George Danielson, and he lives in Huntington, Indiana.
Oh, nice.
That's where they built the big GM truck plant up there, I believe.
Okay. Oh, my family grew up in Roanoke, just down the road from there.
Okay. Well, this was George Danielson. Now, he wouldn't have been there when you were there.
Right.
George was from Michigan, and I met him when I went to Kalamazoo, and he and I pleasure hunted together. Originally, he hunted redbone dogs. And then he kind of gravitated to the walker dogs, as so many people do.
Right.
But we just had a terrific time hunting together. Then as I was getting about ready to leave up there, he started getting more interested in squirrel hunting with feists.
Yes.
And then he has had some mountain curs. And then
right.
I saw him at Autumn Oaks, and he was there, and it really shocked us, for me to see that he was in a wheelchair. And so, I wanted to catch up with him. He and I had so many good hunts together. And, you know, it just – but he's the guy to kind of roll with the punches. And once he got he wouldn't give up. He went from those big running coon dogs to feist dogs, and then he went to beagles. He said, I can, I can sit out here and listen to these beagles run. You know, so he's a true houndsman and one of the smartest guys when it came to dogs and training dogs and all that I ever met. And it just, and now I find out that he's in the nursing home and cannot talk to me on the phone, not physically able. So it there again,
Good times.
Exactly. As I said before, I've said many times, the best one I heard was my friend Nathan Eds in West Virginia said, "Steve, we're standing in the checkout line."
Checkout line. You got that right.
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No. I just wanted to kind of get back on that a little bit about that mountain hunting, because now I have several listeners that do still hunt in the mountains. Some of them around where, I hunted when I was there. But I'll confess to you now, Fred, Nubbin and I talked about this the other day. We used to go to Autumn Oaks or Winter Classic or somewhere, someplace, and know about everybody in the room. And now we don't know a tenth of the people in the room, It's really, really changed a lot in that regard. We put a thing about some pups that my partner Cody Fox up there is going to have. Hopefully he got the female bred. And in one day I got 10 calls. Texts and messenger text.
That's the one you had a picture of.
Yeah. Sid Underwood told me I shouldn't be putting that dog porn on Facebook, he said.
Well, you seem to be having a lot of luck with him. He's producing.
Yeah. And of all 10 of these inquiries, I got people wanting to send me money. Or I told them, you don't send it to me. I don't know. Own that female. But anyway, I didn't know one of them. I did not know a single one
something?
Out of 10 guys,
Well, let me tell you what. I saw that on Facebook, that pair. You're a good-looking bitch, too.
Yes, said, she is.
And those are the kind of crosses when you just want to try, got to try. I text my friend. Remember back initially, before you even had him going good, and I told my friend, I haven't met the kid. In fact, he's called me through a friend, and he said my other friend Tony said, "Well, you got to get a hold of Fred, get a hold of the right dog." He wanted a puppy. Well, it's probably his first mistake, just starting out. You need to get hunt with somebody, or you don't need a puppy. You don't know what to do with it. But he said, "I'd like to have a plot or a black and tan."
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, I don't have any more connections." I said, "I can tell you some people. But there's a young dog coming on that a friend of mine has," and that was Fever. And I said, "If you want a plot, he's not that far away." And I said, "They're up here in the hills." And I said, "I would, I'd try a pup." I said, "I've always liked a plot."
Yeah.
And And I said, number one, because they're the minority. They're different.
Well, that's Everybody's it. That's
Walker,
it.
Though. And so he ended up, through another friend of mine, gave him out of a grand night a Walker pup.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
Now, this was a year ago, about a year or so when I talked to you. And I checked with him to see if he had any pups and all. And he said, hey, he had a couple females bred. There's first two, I think. Well, I just sent him a text this week. I said, and a picture of Fever. And I said, here's what you could have had. I've been checking them. The Walker dogs, hey, the Walker dogs are not staying treated. I just sent him a text. I said, here's what you could have had right here. I said, he's producing, but you probably couldn't even get on the waiting list now.
Yeah, that's the deal. You know, that grapevine out there. Do you know Jody Thompson from Jessup, Georgia?
Yeah, I do know him. I can't put a face.
Back when I met him, he was handling a dog for Howard Chester. Okay. And did you ever meet Howard from Social Circle?
Yes. I think I have.
Mr. Howard and his wife, Nell, they were usually like at Winter Classic and stuff. But Jody, I remember the first night I hunted with Jody was at Plot Days in Flora, Illinois. And I was hunting a little dog I called Pee Wee. And we had a good cast, and he was hunting a dog for Howard. A dog called Bally, and I believe it was Bally, or it might have been Shorty. There were two different dogs there, but I can't remember that part for sure, but I think it's Bally. Anyway, we got down right to the wire, and my dog gets treed, and I need this tree to win, okay? Well, he's not treeing right. He's hitting it, and then he's shutting up. He's hitting it, and he's shutting up, totally out of character. And I said, man, something is wrong there. I just kept waiting. Well, it was just a matter probably of a few seconds or a minute, you know. And when Jody's dog came in there, he nailed it, you know, and Jody treed him. Well, that tree beat me. They had the coon. But when we got in there, they also were in a yellow jacket's nest. And them yellow jackets were eating my dog up. He'd get up there. He liked to sit down right at the base of the tree and throw his chin up on the bark. And he'd go in there, and them bees would eat him up or yellow jacket.
That's bad.
So I remembered that. But anyway, I think you might listen, keep your ears open down there. Jody, I was able to steer Jody to a nice little plop female that's a litter mate to my ghost dog and in Indiana. And the boy has had her and kept telling me what a good female she was. I think she's won a cast or two already. And he said, man, I'm a pup trainer. I'm too old. I can't hunt these hunts like I used to, and I'm gonna have to sell her. So it just so happened about that time Jody had contacted me and said he was looking for a dog, and I told him about this female. So he bought her, and so far he seems to be real pleased with her, but I'm just anxious to see how she works out because I know Jody's real particular. You know, he knows a good dog, and he demands it, you know, But so far, he says he's tickled to death with her. He sent me one little note. He said she treed two last night, and I took her again this morning. She treed two more. And he said, I love the fact that she's young and eager, he said. I told him. I said, well, that's one thing you can say about this line of dogs. They're eager. they're real heavy on that eager part. But anyway, that's just dog stuff, you know, and timing, you know. That's just at the time because I don't know, a plot's not for everybody, that's for sure. They'd be a lot more popular if they were, you know, but anyway.
We don't have many out front, you know, the Moores and Dale Brandenburger. We just
anymore. Don't you don't. There was a time when they were, you know, they were right up there. Do you remember that time when Benny Moore had that challenge hunt with James Merchant?
Yeah, Burke beat him.
Yeah.
The agreement was they were, whoever would write an article, and he spoke highly of them and all that.
Yeah,
and
I guess they got to pick whatever dog they wanted to run. Of course, James had Banjo, too, at that time, you know. And
yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned this to you and all, but it was funny. James came in the tennis center there at Aurora, Kentucky, PKC Worldwide, one time. And, of course, James was, you know, up in years. And he said, if I still had Banjo 2, I'd break PKC.
Well, he had that attitude, I think,
too. Oh, yeah. James was, he was a little cocky guy, but man, back in the day, he was a winner.
Did they? Well, of course, back then I was really just getting my feet wet, and you'd hear all this stuff, and you don't know the fact from back then. It was just word of mouth, and but I with John Monroe,
yeah.
John Monroe, Burchett, and Joe House. I'd always heard.
Yeah, those were the big three in the Walker breed there, and, you know, Finley River and House and the Merchant stuff. Yeah.
There, of course, the stories I've heard of all of them. Burchett was a straight out, I understand, hunter, hardcore.
Oh, yeah.
Then with House, you had the other issues, a lot of issues.
Yeah.
But. John Sedgwick, you know,
Sedgwick from, yeah, I know John. I know him well.
John's a top shelf guy.
Yeah, he and his former wife, Lucy, I knew them real well when I was at UKC, you know.
Right.
And I saw John, I think it was last year at Autumn Oaks. No, at maybe at Winter Classic. One of the two, I saw him. And caught up with him.
I remember he made a statement to one of my friends. He said he was at a meeting and John Monroe was there. I don't know what the deal was. But he said, what's the difference in yesterday's dogs, your dogs, and today's? And John just said, we bred coon dogs. Mm-hmm. They're breeding competition dogs today.
Yeah.
And I guess that's right.
It is pretty much, you know. Yeah, it's a different... The dogs that are doing the winning in these big, high exposure hunts for these thousands of dollars are definitely not a dog that you want to take out here on Tuesday night and turn him loose after prayer meeting and hope to get back in time for work in the morning.
These are for hardcore going.
Yeah, I call them in fire breathing competition dogs.
That they are.
I think this young one I got, Ghost, he's going to lean more toward that fire-breathing side.
Is he?
He's definitely not a young man's dog, I know. Man's dog.
Did he get more of that from the female side, do you think?
I don't know. John Sapier's female sure has done good for us. He's bred her twice, and then he told me the other day that he's watching her, and when she comes in, he's going to breed her again. So, that kind of fooled me because I kind of thought he bear hunts her some and water races and field trials and stuff like that, and I don't think he coon hunted her that much, but, man, this little female that Jody's got down there's out of her, and Ghost is out of her, and they got one called Stitch that they like, and a boy named Tim, or not Noah, but Noah Kiever, and then there's a boy named Josh Marshall down there in South Carolina that's got one named Luke. So that first litter had, you know, several. And this is going to sound like a commercial for our stud dog, and I don't want to do that at all because, you know, there's some good – back to what you were talking about, Fred. There's some good plot dogs out there, but the guys are just not pushing them.
Yeah, you know, that's usually the case.
Bill Harrell in Indiana has got a dog they call Logan, and, man, he was a real competitor. He placed him like it – at Walker days and several big hunts and all. And it goes back to what we call redwood breeding back there in Ohio, Fred Cavey, and then later Jeff Coons and those boys. And, and down through there. But that's a good dog. And there's a dog named Hyde out in Illinois that I hear is producing good dogs. And there's a tracker dog. It is at least a two or three way grand up in Michigan and all, but the boys just don't push these dogs, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think when if a young fella comes in, he's influenced, of course, a lot by the walker dog with all they've
won.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
That's only natural.
Well, sure.
And that's where they look. They don't look at a black dog, red dog, or black dog.
Well, in defense of the walkers, I don't know if you saw the picture. I thought it was one really cool picture of my buddy Randy Smith's dogs up there. Some hunt had taken a picture. He had six Grand Knight champion females there in one picture. Those Lone Pine bred dogs. And I had hunted with all of them but one. And the one that Chris Saunders from Ohio hunts, she's out of Frogger. And I had not hunted with her, but had been fortunate, you know, to go up to Randy's and hunt with those dogs. And
really a click of them.
Yeah, for sure. But well, do you get out at all anymore and listen to a chase or anything, Fred? Or
I haven't a coon dog now. I'm going, excuse me. We have a couple hunts lined up, rabbit hunts with big friends. This Friday we're going to a trial. And then a couple weeks we're going on just a rabbit hunt. And I go along, sit and listen. I did what I have for the last couple of years, two or three. And I got a friend that's an avid beagler outside of Macon, and he's tried a new format, and it's interesting. He lets a guy that can run a 3-pack or a 6-pack, their own dogs, and they run just their dog for an hour. And you can sign up for the 3-dog pack or the 6-dog pack.
Do you know which registry's doing that?
He's not doing it. No registry.
Oh, okay. I see.
And they're booked up. He had the first one last year. He's got the second one this year. And they're booked up 2 months before the hunt. They've got a nice kitchen, nice running grounds, and just a nice operation. Brings in outside judging. And they're judging rabbit dogs.
Do they run in an enclosure, or are they running on the outside?
Let me think a minute. This one is an enclosure, but it's a big one.
Yeah, three or four fox pen.
Three or four guys went together and bought the Macon Beagle Club, the old Brace Dog Beagle Club.
Yeah.
They bought it and then farmed it for several years, stocked it, and these are the first trials they're having. But different format, and the guys love it because they can run their own pack and not throw them in like you do.
Yeah. So they actually go out, I guess, with the judge and score that pack, just those dogs.
Yep. Two dogs.
So and then they bring the winners back, or
they bring the winners back, the winning pack. They'll bring them back and run them again. They'll run them a second time. And so a little different format, but the guys loved it.
That's interesting.
It seemed to work last year, and of course the people running it, this guy, they're top shelf, well thought of. You know, the Beagle world, they've got their shady deals too.
It's life. You know, what I found out when we started the Beagle program at UKC, and you know, wanted to have a Beagle program. And, of course, the first thing we came up with was to kind of style it after the Coonhound program, where you had one dog, one handler, and you called your dog and on strike, and there was a set of points like a Coonhound points, and then the handlers would spread out, and when they saw somebody saw the rabbit, they'd say, "I got a line right here by that fence post and that cedar tree." Well, they'd all converge on that point, and when the rabbit came or the pack came through, they'd score the ones that were on that line, where that would verify what this handler had said, you know, that the rats are where the rabbit went. And it was a lot of fun, and it was competitive, but they, you know, branched out into other things. But now, AKC, for years and years and years, you know, they were running the brace dogs, which we called them the walkie-talkies, you know, the real slow dogs. And then they had what they called a small pack option.
Absolutely.
SPO. Absolutely. And all that. And then the boys up in New York and up in Canada, Branko, Carpan, and some of those guys, they were running large pack on hair. You know.
Hair, right.
So I remember going to a lot of Beagle clubs and the AKC clubs had some fantastic properties. I mean, you know, there was a lot of money invested in
those. They threw the money into them, nice clubhouse and plenty activity. When I started in the 50s with Beagles, I may have told you, but our principal of our high school got us started. They called it the Fort Wayne Beagle Airs. There was about 12 of us that were really committed. There was others, but we were really into it, rabbit hunted every day anyway. So, but they got to start. They, and Wayne Price was with AKC then.
Yeah.
I don't know if
I remember that name for sure.
He used to write an article.
Yes, he did. He wrote for Hunting Dog Magazine, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
He came around to the clubs and it was either 4 days or five, would have a training session to teach you how to judge with AKC. So, we would do class work in the clubhouse. Then we went out in the field, and then they would bring dogs. They brought a variety, field championship. Now, this was in the 50s. This was before the walkie-talkie. Mm-hmm. This was before the Pearson Creek and Limbos.
Yeah.
Spin and win and da-da-da.
Yeah. So
this was when dogs would run around. We'd take our dogs that we rabbit hunted with, killing 200-300 rabbits a year, to the trial on Saturday. And running them all week and go to the trial and you can place them.
Yeah.
So completely different kind of dog. But then when the Pearson Creeks, and that's the story you probably know a good bit about.
Well, those dogs were out of Virginia, I believe, weren't they? Kentucky.
Yeah, a lot of them. Kentucky, North Carolina had the reputation if he wouldn't.
Well, I remember a lot of those dogs, and I remember that Lucy Van Little Man dog, and of course Branko, he was a hare hunter, so he had one named Gila Prop and different ones. And, I remember all those because when we got into beagling at UKC, we got some dogs, you know, and Todd Kellum and I got a pair of dogs. I'm trying to remember who we got them from. Called them Boone and Crockett. And then I bought one from a guy named Wayne Garrison. Did you know him from down around Knoxville there somewhere? Big guy in the Beagles. I think it was Harrison or Garrison. I can't remember. But anyway, I called her Glory. And he said she ran too much rabbit for his pack.
Yeah.
Well, she was supposed to be a broke dog about 3 years old. When I got her paper, she was about 15 months old. And she was anything but broke, believe me. But we got that straightened out, you know, and I had a lot of fun with that little dog. She had some of that old line brace stuff way back, Creek, Limbo, and that stuff back there.
Yeah, if you crossed them out.
Yeah, but she ran a good bit of, as they say, she ran a lot of rabbit, you know, they'd say.
Well, though, the brace dogs like to ruin the Beagles, of course.
Oh,
They did ruin the clubs. They broke all the clubs.
They used to run ads and say, this dog absolutely will not compete.
Oh, that used to get me. He absolutely will not pull up to another dog.
Right. He come up there, that rabbit makes a right-hand turn, he plants him feet right there. He stretches that neck out to the right as far as he can, up ahead as far as he can.
I would join. I belong to different clubs, Smoky Mountain Beagle Club in Atlanta, the Oak Ridge Beagle Club in Tennessee, and I would join the club so I could run my dogs in the enclosure, you know, just run them. The trials, I had too strong of dogs because I wanted a rabbit dog that would hunt. And I would many times help judge. I couldn't stand. I said, I finally had to quit judging. I said, I couldn't follow that kind of dog.
No. Well, we came up with
the. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, we came up with the kind of a philosophy when we were at UKC that the dog should be able to run the track as fast as scenting conditions will allow.
Yes.
You know, but. Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of them. But, you know, the UKC program has done well. My little ego wall up here, I don't have a frame, but I judged the very first UKC Hunting Beagle Club licensed event in Darlington, Maryland, judged the final cast. We had two dogs and a bitch in that final cast, and after the early run, when we got the milked it down to three dogs, that female came in heat, so we had to disqualify her and run the two dogs, and an old boy named Testerman had a dog named Jack, and old Jack won it. Was our first one, our first UKC hunt, so. But that was a lot of fun. I liked the little dogs, you know. I really did.
Vicki Bassett's pretty active, I think, still. I think that's UKC she's running in, isn't it?
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it is, yeah. She's really active in it now.
Yeah, I spoke to her at Autumn Oaks. She was there.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I hadn't seen her in several years.
Haven't seen her in years. Yeah, I haven't seen her in years.
Well, I tell you what, Fred, Did you get any pup or many pups on the ground out of Old Dancer?
Yeah.
Have you followed any of that bloodline? Is there any of it still out there anywhere?
I don't know. I wish I could name him for you. He
was out of Sting, wasn't he?
No, he's out of Ace.
Ace, I mean. Yeah.
Out of Sting. He was Ace's number one producer.
Yeah, man.
And I bred him 44, 45 times.
Woo.
And he had 20, last years ago, last I checked, he had 27 Niter Grand Knights.
That's great, man. That's great.
So as you will find with Fever and as you have with other dogs, I found a female kind of influenced the confirmation on his pups.
Yeah, definitely.
She was the one that got the confirmation. He put the miles in the tree in, and I hunted with one dog. You know him, he's advertised that Grand 90 mile up in Ohio, I believe. It's Ohio. Anyway, a friend of mine tried him out, was going to buy him. And he was the nearest thing. I would have hardly known him from Dancer in the Woods. You know, I just went along a couple nights, and my friend, I don't know why, before he bought him, or before he was going to buy him, he took him to a vet down in Mobile, all the way from Macon, down in Mobile, Alabama. And that vet said, checked him, and he said, something's not right with his heart. He said, I believe I'd take him back and get another. That's what the vet told me. I said, it doesn't work that way. You just so he hadn't bought him yet, but he didn't buy him. Well, the dog went on, lived a normal life, produced, finished Grand Night. And I told him, Francis Mason, my friend Francis, I said, you should have bought him.
Yeah.
So anyway,
hindsight's 20/20. Yeah.
That's right. I these stories. Is this one you're going to put on your podcast?
You've been on the podcast ever since we picked up the phone.
I might not say it, but I wanted to correct myself. I thought of that weeks ago. You know, I told you I met John Plott. I think we said Vaughn Plott. I never met Vaughn, but I met John in Maggie Valley. Were they brothers?
John was the oldest of that group, that family. I mean, you know, he and Vaughn were brothers, But John was the oldest, and Vaughn was the youngest.
Okay. Well, I met John.
John was the one, I think, that lived at the house there on Hazel Creek.
Yeah, right on the creek.
Uh-huh.
Right, yeah. Straddle the creek. Well, I just, for some reason, I thought of it, and I said, I haven't met Vaughn. I think all these stories, and you get off track here, but I will never forget about, did we talk about the two puppies I had one time off Dancer that were, one was 4 months, 3 weeks old, the other was 5 months and 2 weeks old.
I don't believe and, so. I don't think we talked about them.
It was a hot, hot, dry summer. We hadn't been able to hunt for several weeks. I mean, it was up in the 90s at night. Just humidity, no rain, and we were about fit to be tied. We're in snake country, and it was not the time to go hunting. I had these two young dogs, and they stayed at my friend's house. I lived in a subdivision, and I didn't keep the pups. I just keep two or three dogs, Dancer and a couple of squirrel and something else. So anyway, they stayed out in the country at my friend's house. They had never been out of the lot, but I told Kenneth, I said, Kenneth, let's just load those pups to get them in the dog box and just ride out to the deer hunting lease. Let's just ride them around. So that's what we did. The dust was in the air. The bugs were in the air. You could see them in the headlights and driving. So we're driving on the dust. I round the curve, and there's a coon chasing bugs around in the road, in the dirt road. He's running up the road, grabbing one. He's running with us. I said, I just stopped. I left my headlights on. Now, these pups had never ridden in the truck. They didn't know how to lead. They didn't know anything. So, but they were stud feed pups. But one of them was out of the Grand Night Champion down in Florida. Another was a night champion out of Tennessee. So a lot of good-blooded dogs. Well, anyway, I stopped the truck, and they couldn't jump off the tailgate. I set them both on the ground and walked around. And that coon just... he wasn't scared or alerted. He just walked straight out the headlights in the trail. Well, I walked those puppies out in front of the truck. They both threw their head in the air. The wind must have been right. As hot as it was, they could wind that coon. Both of them opened and went out of sight in the headlights. We got in. I jumped back in the truck. We went up, and they're gone now. They've never smelled nothing, run nothing in their life. And they... we get up there, and they had turned left on the road. Their little trail went, and one was treed, I'm telling you, barking. We couldn't believe it. So I jump out of the truck, and he's not treed on a tree. What it was, the coon turned to the right and went in the weeds, into the woods, and he was just treeing on all the scent that was on the weeds. Yeah. He was just barking. Yeah. He was locked down. The other hey, the other one is fading in the wind.
Oh, boy.
The 5 months and 2 week-old is going so strong, we couldn't even follow him. I got in the truck. We had to loop around about a half a mile to go around where he was going. Well, he met us coming, walking with his tongue hanging out. Here he come, walking up the road. So we're talking to ourselves. I said, oh, Lord, what have we got here? The next day, I said, well, here's what we'll do. I said, let's get a coon out here. We had one. Let's get him, put him in a cage, take him down to pond over in the farm point in the daytime.
Yeah.
Get him wet, hang him up a tree, you know, the old
basic. Oh, yeah.
They barked at that coon. We thought they was going to get too hot. So about 2-3 nights went by, and I couldn't stand it anymore. I said, we got to take them pups out. So I called my friend, Doug Wilson. He went along with Greg Wilson. He went with us, and I said, let's see what we're doing. I want to show you something. Those two pups went. We again, set them off the tailgate, walked them down in the woods around a feeder. I had a feeder down. So we walked them down that way. They both opened up, and down the creek they went. And one of them, finally, the little one, the youngest one, 4 months, 3 weeks, he come back. He come back to us. The other one went way down the creek, way down, and Greg went on and followed him. Finally, he just quit and come to him. So we put him up. I started telling about my friends about they'd want to come see. We'd every now and then. Well, what happened then? They're not, neither one of them's 6 months old yet. My friend called me and he said, I don't know what's up, but those two pups won't bark. They're not barking at all when I go out there to feed. To this day, I do not know what happened. I don't know what they got in. I took them to the vet, both of them. They couldn't bark. They, really? They checked their throat, everything. He said, everything appears all right. I said, these dogs bark all the time. There's no problem. Well, the young female was a beauty, the youngest one. I gave her to the, if I could name him, you'd know him. All he does is show dogs around the Macon area there. He's always had a grand show champion or something. I gave that female to him to show. She made a grand show champion.
Mm, couldn't
bark.
That's
the other one. The other one could just like she had a horse bark, but couldn't bark. Chop or ball, either one on track. I don't know to this day.
It might have been some kind of allergy. It might have been a food-related allergy or something.
I have no idea to this day.
Well, I remember the first time that I went down to hunt with Johnny Brinkley in Tallahassee, down there, and Lee Kearns was helping me with the AKC shows, and I'd hired David McKee from South Carolina to be our judge, and we had a show there at the Stockyard in Thomasville, and Lee said, well, that was Winter Classic time, you know. And he said, well, after we get the I was already with AKC then, but I think we were still having a hunt of some kind there in Albany. But anyway, long story short, I took Roper down there to hunt with Johnny and those boys. And every time he would try to bark, he'd squall out just like you'd stepped on his foot. And I got him, and I opened his jaw up, and he'd squall. And there was something, and it took him about, I'm not going to say how long, but it wasn't all that long, a few days that it came back. But there was something, somehow he'd hurt his jaw, and when he'd try to bark, it hurt. So, you know, you get into all kinds of things with these dogs, how in the world, you know. But it's been an interesting life, though, hadn't it, bud?
Oh, what are you talking about? It, like you said, you got to like it to put up with it.
That's for sure. Well, man, we've been on this thing an hour, and I imagine you probably got things to do, but I sure enjoyed talking with you, Fred, and I hope to call you a lot more often, really.
I didn't know we were podcasting. I thought it was just chat.
Yeah. Well, those are always the best ones. But now, first thing, if you don't want to, you know, air this, we won't, you know.
Well, you know what to air and what not to.
Nah, it's all good. It's all good.
So, yeah, right. I'll holler back at you. We'll chat off the podcast.
Okay, Fred. Well, you take care, and I wish the best.
Thanks a lot. Take care, and good luck with those dogs. Looks like they're gonna roll.
You know, the old saying is, when you wrote ads for the magazines, paper will hold still for anything. Internet's about the same thing. You got to be real careful and dial it back every once in a while. It'd be like that old boy wrote the ad on that dog and described him, and his wife said, well, what you going to ask for? And he said, well, I don't know. I wanted a dog like that all my life. I'm going to just keep him.
Okay,
Fred. God's richest blessings to you, buddy. It's always great to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Well, that's my good friend Fred Bright from down around Macon, Georgia. Fred and I go back to the days at UKC. We had some terrific hunts around the UKC Winter Classic in those days when we were getting that thing rolling, and just one of those class individuals that you meet along this journey of coonhounds, the kind of people that as once said, you know, you judge a man by whether you'd want to climb in the truck and drive 500 miles with him. Well, 500 miles wouldn't be enough for Fred because he's always got great stories and just a great, great guy. I do want to thank my sponsor, W Hunting Supply, Buddy and Jess Woodbury out there in Washington State. They do such a great job in supplying us with virtually everything that we need if we follow these hounds, anything from the apparel we wear, the electronics that we can't do without anymore, to just every kind of dog supply, collars, leashes. They have an assortment of books you can get, Gone to the Dogs, A Coon Hunter's Journey, there. And just check out their website, dusupply.com. Thanks, Buddy and Jess, for always being a great sponsor. Folks, we're going to wind this up. And as I mentioned there, Nubbin and I will be heading to the Winter Classic. We'll be there on Thursday night. I hope to see the top, the top 10 show. Then we'll be there Friday and all day Saturday. So hope to see you all there. And I want to wish the guys that are going to Salisbury, North Carolina, this weekend as I'm recording, is the first running of the Carolina Classic, the hunt that's being held at the Salisbury Rowan County Fairgrounds there in Salisbury, where Southeastern Walker Days was held for many, many years. And I know that they've put a lot of work in the preparation for this hunt, and I hope that the hunters have gone out and supported that effort. But we'll let you know how it went next week. But until then, this is the Old Coon Hunter, Steve Fielder, telling you, as I always do, if you're looking for me, the first place you ought to look is to see if I've gone to the dogs.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
How many discounts does USAA Auto Insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.